morning, Terra Nova Church. I'm Matthew Miller, and I lead community extension here at Terra Nova. I'm also Terra Nova's most uneasy public speaker, so I'm going to ask in advance for your patience. We're going to take, this is a little bit of a special Sunday for us. We're going to deviate from our normal worship and preaching routine to talk a little bit about our community extension efforts here at Terra Nova, what it means to be a missional church, and some of the words that we use or you hear and see around here on a regular basis, missional, monastic, scattered, gathered, words that are kind of incorporated into our church DNA. So if you're visiting today, this isn't the usual thing, but we're glad you're here, and we hope that some of the things that are part of our church DNA might have an impact on you as well. We're also going to spend some time with Tracy Neitzel from Joseph's House. We've been privileged and honored and blessed to be able to serve at Joseph's House over the last year, and we're going to revisit that this morning. The word missional, I'm not going to attempt to give a full definition of the word missional. I actually feel a little ill-equipped to do it. I do want to talk about some of the Terra Nova nuances of what that word would mean to us. And there's a couple things that are underpinnings to the word missional that I want to share with you. The first is that at Terra Nova, we really desire to live out the gospel of Jesus Christ fully integrated into our lives. We are at church the same person we are in the community, the same person we are at our schools, at our jobs, with our friends, and in our neighborhoods. We have a desire to reflect the love of Jesus Christ wherever we go, in all of those same places that I just referred to. I think this piece is important. We desire to engage and participate culturally in the life of our community. We're not culture warriors here at Terra Nova Church. We desire to understand and love our culture, not to necessarily set aside the things about our culture that we're passionate about, the music, the art, the people. We're not lobbing stones at our culture from the inside walls of our church. We're looking for opportunities to engage in culture. We're looking for opportunities for gospel to intersect culture. And in that same vein, we approach our culture with a genuine compassion, interest, and an affinity for our community, for the people in it. We don't approach people like their statistics, like their projects. We came to Troy not out of a thought that, boy, Troy really needs Terra Nova Church. We came to Troy largely out of an affinity for this community. When we looked at Troy, we saw people that looked like us. We saw artists and professionals. We saw people that are wealthy, people that are poor. We came here because this was a community that fit who we were. And that's a desire for us as a church as well. And we hope that we approach all the people in our lives and all the communities that we serve in the same way. Two words that go together often around here are missional and monastic. And these are the venues for the expression of our worship. We worship in the monastery. Revolution Hall is our monastery. And it smells especially beery this morning. We come here and worship corporately. We pursue the word of God. We sing. We pray. We worship God with our tithes and our offerings. We also leave here and we worship sometimes in medium-sized groups, Poema for women, Imago for men, Theology at the Tap Room for people who like theology and beer. Those are great places to connect. And then we worship, maybe most importantly, in the context of New Tribes, small groups between 8 and 12 people usually that meet every other week throughout the capital area. If you come here every Sunday, we're very glad to have you, and we hope you keep coming. But to really kind of understand the fullness of Christian community, to be a part of an authentic biblical community, we hope you'll consider engaging in some of those areas, especially New Tribes. We're launching fresh versions of Poema, Imago, of New Tribes, and of Theology at the Tap Room in January, and we would love for you to be a part of that. We also worship missionally. The expressions of our worship outside of the monastery. And that can involve spiritual disciplines. We pray and we sing and we chase after God outside of the monastery. But it also involves having a heart of compassion and a heart for justice, serving people as Christ has called us to in those areas. And specifically, we try to keep life here at the monastery small. This is not going to be an over-programmed church. We want your Christian life to revolve around Christ and not Christian programs. So if you're wondering why there's not a lot more programs here, it's because we want you to be out and we want you to be in the world and we want you to be serving people and loving people in your lives. Two other words you hear a lot around here are gathered and scattered. As the missional church, we gather in programs organized and sponsored by Terra Nova. Those are local. They have internet. Some of them are international. We also scatter as individuals who, by their own initiative, seek opportunities to serve people in their communities and the world. I'm going to rattle through some people that have left Terra Nova this year to serve out in the world. This is not a comprehensive list. We know many of you are not represented by these people that we're going to run through right now. And we also want you to know that if you have a heart to serve somewhere, that it's our job as a church to equip and to send you. So if we can help you, we hope you'll reach out to me and give us a chance to support your effort to serve other people. This is Damian Beltsmith. This past fall, Damian went to Purlington, Mississippi with our friends from Brunswick Church and Presbyterian Disaster Assistance. They cleaned up, they repaired and built homes for the victims of Hurricane Katrina. And in the spring, in April, Damian's going to be leading another trip down to Purlington, a group of people from Terra. And if you're interested, you can sign up for that out in the lobby today. Tom Corey. Tom's a Presbyterian pastor who's a part of our congregation. He's working in his doctoral in spiritual formation. And this year he went to the Ukraine Biblical Seminary in Kiev. He instructed 45 pastors who previously had no formal seminary training under communism. And then Tom, Ann, and Susanna Corey went to Nairobi, Kenya in August. They did a medical mission where Tom worked and met people's spiritual needs while Ann, who's a physician, and Susanna's a nurse, administered to medical needs. Elizabeth Corey, fresh out of college, decided this fall after a lot of soul searching to leave behind friends and family and her new tribe and go to Los Angeles, where she works for an organization called Interchange. She teaches and tutors middle school students in low-income areas, and she works as an advocate for undocumented immigrants. The Corey family is our 2007 Community Extension poster family. And this is Melly. I can't tell you much about Melly, and the reason is because she worked in an area that's incredibly dangerous. We can't give her last name because the podcast might pick it up. And we can't tell you about really the nature of her work other than it was in a medical mission in Burma. She was there this fall during the government crackdown. I know some of you are going to remember those just incredible images from the news this fall. And we would like to share more, but Melly wants to go back, and we don't want to put her in danger. But just that fact alone, I think, should kind of speak to the nature of what she's been doing. And then the Thorne family spent 6 weeks in New York City this past summer ministering to the spiritual needs of college students and launching campus initiatives in New York City. We also serve our community gathered as a church. We serve in the form of Terra Nova Gallery. At Terra Nova Gallery this year, actually, let me back up for a second. We have office space down the street at 409, if you're not familiar with Terra Nova Church. We have an office space at 409 River Street, and we convert that space into an art gallery to serve as a venue for local artists to show their art. We hold advertised receptions once a month that in conjunction with Troy Night Out. This year in 2007, we did 12 openings. We served 18 local artists, and over 2,000 people came through Terra Nova Gallery for different Troy Nights Out. This year, we also launched a program with Love 146. You'll know Love 146 as Justice for Children International. They recently changed their name. It's Love 146's mission to end human trafficking. And in September, we gathered local businesses, local media, churches, to create awareness on the issue of human trafficking and raise money for Love 146. We had about 500 people attend Abolition Week events, and thousands more were exposed through Metroland's editorial coverage and advertising support. And we raised in the end over $5,000 for Love 146 and have plans to expand our efforts in 2008. And that brings us to Joseph's House. Last year at this time, we invited Tracy Neitzel, who's the executive director of Joseph's House, to come in and to tell you a little bit about what the mission of her organization is. And we invited her back because we thought it would be more powerful to hear about the Terra Nova and Joseph's House relationship from her than it would be from me. Tracy has been the executive director for Joseph's House for a long time. She has served there in some capacity for 17 years, over 17 years. And I just wanted to invite Tracy to come on up and share with us about Joseph's House. As Tracy, as you're making your way up, I want you to know that on Christmas Eve, we dedicated our offering to Joseph's House, and I have a check for you for $1,000. Please welcome Tracy. Thanks.
What a wonderful way to end the year. Thank you, all of you. I really like year endings. It gives us all a time to reflect on the beautiful and the good and the bad and the ugly and where we failed and where we had major success. I loved what Matthew said about chasing after God, because I think all of us as a people chase after a lot of things. And I think what we do at Joseph's House often is chasing. We're chasing after dignity, chasing after respect, chasing after what is right, what is decent. I mean, how do you measure a year in the life of a homeless shelter? It's pretty easy to do in numbers. I can tell you that by tomorrow night, we will have provided over 10,000 nights of shelter. We will have provided advocacy, support, and resettlement services to the more than 500 people that stayed in our shelter, and also to 160 families who stayed in motels because there's not enough shelter space in Rensselaer County for all the homeless people in our community. But that doesn't really speak to the chase or to the mission or to what we do. We're a mission-driven agency, as you are a missional church, and everything that we do speaks to treating people with respect, to recognizing their worth, to looking at the strengths and the values and the importance that they bring to the table. And this year has been a good year for us because we've been able to do a lot of that with your help. Joseph's House would not be open. Our doors would not be open if we did not have help from the community. And to have a true and equal partner who shares our vision and who shares our mission, like your church, means a lot to us. I haven't met all of you yet. I haven't seen all of you yet. But I've met some of you. More than a third of you, I think, or more than a third of your basic congregation helped at Joseph's House this year, and you helped in many, many different ways. And in some ways, we were all very successful, and in some ways, not so. But we learn from our mistakes, and that's one of the things we reflect on when a year passes by. We had about 30 of you helping us with weekend meals. We have a cook Mondays through Fridays who serves a full lunch and dinner every day, Monday through Friday. But on weekends, we have no one to cook. And we really depend on groups to help us out. Your 30 folks, are any of you here today? I know some of you are here, but raise your hands. You know, you really ought to thank these people because they helped crank out over 500 meals this year. They fed over 500, they made over 500 meals for folks staying in our shelter on the weekends. And we're grateful. We couldn't have done that. They did it for us. About 20 folks helped us this year at the end of the year deliver holiday packages, deliver Christmas presents, deliver toys to children. When the holidays come around, we really work extraordinarily hard to provide as authentic a Christmas experience as we can for the children who stay with us. And sometimes when we talk about authentic Christmas, we're talking about what kids see on TV and what they hear around them and what they think Christmas should be. And we strongly believe that part of Christmas should be toys. Clothes are a basic right. Personal care items are a basic right. Health care is a basic right. Food is a basic right. Toys are what kids should get at Christmas. And you embraced that with us and helped us deliver toys. We supplied toys to almost 200 children this year who have been homeless since last January. We had photos with Santa Claus. We had the Balloon Man. We had arts and crafts projects. We had a huge Christmas party for all these kids. And rather than make these families lug these bags of toys home on the bus or in one of our vans, Your congregation was good enough and gracious enough right at the busiest time of year to take some time off and deliver for us. So thank you so much for that. One of the things we didn't do so well, but doesn't mean we're going to stop trying because it's an incredibly important part of our mission and yours, is provide hospitality to our homeless guests. One of the most important roles that members of the community can provide at Joseph's House is as a, what we call a hospitality volunteer. And that's someone who will just come in, spend time in our shelter, spend time with our guests, listen to our guests, play cards with our guests, play board games, play with the children, whatever it takes to remind our homeless guests that they are valued, that people do care about them. Matt told you, I've been there for 17 years. And many of our guests know me, but they also know that I get paid. It is my job. I have to be there if I want to get a paycheck every 2 weeks. And even though I want to be there, I wouldn't be there for 17 years if I didn't, I am a hired gun. When a volunteer walks in the door, that sends a very different message. That sends a message that they have not been written off, that a community does care about them. People, think about what would have to happen to you to make you walk in the front door of a shelter. If you became homeless today, if you could not go home tonight, would you knock on a shelter door? My guess is no, because you have so many communities that care for you. You have family, you have friends, you have this community. And I think that you would take advantage of all of those things before you knock on your door. You might have cars you'd sleep in. You might have a credit card. You could stay in motels. You have some money. You have friends. You have couches. You have all kinds of alternatives. People who knock on shelter doors have gone through all those alternatives. They've burned all those bridges. They truly believe when they walk in the door at Joseph's House that they have been forsaken, that no one cares about them, that no one is interested in what happens to them. And hospitality volunteers really can reverse that message and really can drive home everything that we try to do at Joseph's House, which is be non-judgmental, treat people with dignity, treat people with grace, treat people with respect. We didn't do so well there this year, and I think Joseph's House has to take a lot of the blame for that. Volunteering's not any easier than working in a shelter. And volunteering doesn't always come naturally or authentically. It's always difficult. It's particularly more difficult when you're trying to volunteer in a fairly thinly staffed agency that has had a lot of turnover in that volunteer coordination department. I think we had 2 folks in the last year and 4 in the last 2 years. We have a new person in that role, Paul Delio, and I hope many of you get to know him in the coming year. And I think I would hope and urge that some of you will try the role of hospitality volunteer again, because I think the kind of congregation you are, the kind of people you are, the kind of church that this is truly, truly lends itself to an authentic volunteer experience. And I would love to welcome you into our family and have you spend some more time with us. Thank you so much for all that you do for us. It is special, it is meaningful, it is real, and it's authentic. You help change people's lives.
Can you hear me? Most of the band is going to come back up, or most of the band's already here. The rest of the band is going to come back up. And we're going to continue on with our service. Ed's going to do a teaching that's going to kind of lay a biblical foundation under some of the things that we talked about this morning. If you want to serve at Joseph's House, there are going to be 3 different ways for people from Terra Nova Church to serve at Joseph's House in 2008. And you can sign up in the lobby today after the service, and you can sign up in the lobby next week after the service. We're going to do meal teams again. Meal teams are generally teams of 6 people. They serve usually quarterly, so your team would serve probably 4 times a year. And that depends very much on how many people we get. It's a great way to do something in community with other people from Terra Nova Church. You would go in the evening and serve a meal and clean up and head out. It's probably a four-hour time commitment once a quarter. You can sign up for that outside in the lobby. We're going to relaunch the Hospitality Volunteer Program, which is for people who want to serve usually monthly. It's flexible, but we try to do it monthly. And you want to serve individually or maybe with one other person, a friend, somebody you come to church with. And we're going to do that as well. Hospitality volunteers kind of provide additional, step in and fill the gap and provide additional staff for the times when Joseph's House staff goes away. And then we're launching a new program in 2008. We're calling it the Lansing Project. Brett and Stacey Kennedy are going to lead it. The Lansing Project is going to send teams of 3 to 4 people to the Lansing Hotel, which is up in Lansingburg. The Lansing Hotel provides permanent residence for people who are homeless. The folks are tenants. Many of them are struggling emotionally or disabled. And we're going to do a program there that's going to start out on a monthly basis that is going to do crafts and bring people together to do stuff creatively and to work together in community. And you can sign up for that as well. Specifically in that one, we're looking for people that have a craft background or a gift for that type of thing. School teachers would be a perfect kind of profile for that. So if you're a craft person, we've got a job for you at Joseph's House in 2008. And you can sign up again in the lobby. If you volunteered at Joseph's House this year, we want you to sign up again. So don't assume because you're already serving at Joseph's House that you don't have to sign up. So we're wiping the slate clean and starting all over again. If you want to serve in 08, please sign up. Paul Delia will come here to Terra at the end of January. We'll do a orientation, and then we'll start our 2008 programs in February. So thanks very much.
Psalm 40 tells us that blessed is the person who considers the poor. It's not something we like to consider very often. And I understand as much as anyone how our lives go. It sometimes seems that it's difficult to get in order the things that we're tasked to do in our own world, in our own home, the relationships we have with our own families, with schools, with coworkers are difficult. We're difficult people. They can be difficult people. Times are hard. All these things keep us rather self-focused. But I promise you, though it may be difficult and painful, as sure as I speak the words of the God found in the Bible, blessed is the person who considers the poor. And I have to ask you to consider it the way God does. You know, throw away your own social and political agendas. That they're not going to help in those considerations. Put those down and consider something on a higher level. We know that there are a lot of reasons why we, and I know people from our community, have had struggles with poverty and in deep need before end up there. We know that there's something wrong with the machinery in us where greed is a part of our lives. And we become the people who are more concerned with our own consumption than the care of someone else. We know there's something in us that gravitates toward things that are self-destructive at times. And our own hands often cause us injury. Other people, ourselves, and misfortune. We know that part of life is illness, disaster, injury at work, injuries in wars that leave people incapable of functioning in ways that we take for granted. But blessed is the one who considers the poor. So what do we do? We don't just want to be intellectuals who consider. There's the kind of person who likes to sit in coffee shops and cocktail parties and talk about what's wrong and actually sort of judge and peg the other people who don't see the answers that they see. And they feel some sort of satisfaction in just simply discussing the problem. I am humbled by the people who do something about those problems and discuss it less. Those people seem to say fewer words because they're so busy doing something about it. We admire those people, and rightly so, because they are more unique among us than common among us. But we need to do something. We need to be people who are called not just to consideration, but action. I'm a father, and so I have certain joys and privileges. One is you get to tell the same stories, and your kids sort of groan because they've heard the stories 5 or 6 times. But you know those are the ones from growing up with fathers and mothers that you remember. You remember they tell the stories. Sometimes it's the context in which you put the story that makes it stay. When you're teaching your children something small, you may just say, look, you don't want to do that, do this, and they move on. And then there are things that are so important. You know, there are the oopses in life that cost you this much and you sort of pick up. And that's how life goes, and hopefully you track up. And then there are the oopses that will throw you down a cliff and utterly ruin you. Like when I tell my kids about drinking and driving, I put it in the context of death. I tell them about dead friends. I get very extremist. I'm good at being extremist. I had a seminary prophet who told me, Ed, you know what your problem is that you're a fanatic? And I accused him of making that a problem. How can you say that to me? The guy's right. But it's that kind of context that Jesus puts the next story in that I want to talk to you about. He puts it in the context of the end of all things. When everything else is set aside, when the problems that are worrying us right now, the things that we can't fix, the pieces and the people that we're frustrated by, the hopes and dreams that we have for tomorrow are done. And it's time to really just reckon, not by our counting, but by objective truth. See, we all have our own subjective truths. We like to play by our own rules, right? This is how I win the game. I'm better than this person. They've lost the game. I'm winning. And then there's the one that really matters that will come. I assure you that will come. If you have a Bible, open it to Matthew chapter 25. I'm just going to read one passage. So if you don't have a Bible, you can just listen, and I'll read this brief passage. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, you did not welcome me. Naked, you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they will answer, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? And he will answer them, saying, truly, I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous enter into eternal life. Judgment's the only word that I can use to rightly speak and reflect what the words of Christ are. It's not one of those comfortable words, but it's a necessary one. Judgment. And it's a judgment based on some actions. Now, we know that the gospel plainly declares it's not our actions that make us okay with God. There's not some grand scale, and we have to figure out how much evil we've done, and like we leave a carbon footprint and trying to offset it, that we try to offset our sin footprint by good acts. You can't be good enough to undo sin. You can't make that not happen. That's why Jesus was sacrificed. And the gospel clearly says that it's by grace that we're saved. But here's what I think is being reflected. The natural fruit the instinct, the reflect of the righteous, because that's who they're called, the ones who are actually following God, is that they will do these things. It's the evidence of their salvation. James will say you can't have salvation without good works. It's silly to even talk about it. You can't be a churchy follower of Christ and not be doing the mission of the kingdom, living out those missional actions. But sometimes the whys of why we do things get confused. Sometimes it's just sporadic. It's Christmas time. We're feeling pretty good. We've got our Christmas mix down, and we're listening to Nat King Cole, and children in Chinese factories have made us really cool gifts that we're going to give to people, and everything seems so right with the world that we're going to be nice. And we fill out a little gift card, or we go and do one good thing. You know what? Do the good thing. I don't want to be the person who puts down the good thing, but it can't just be a spasmodic good thing once in a while that looks like what Jesus is talking about when he talks about the righteous. And it can't just be obligation. You can't just say, well, I got something, so I guess I have to. I'll chuck something to the poor if I have to. You become almost like Ebenezer Scrooge when the charitable workers come around to him, and you know, because Christmas is a good reason to pick a man's pocket, and they want charitable stuff, and he struggles with, why do I have to? It's not obligation. It can't be sort of a karma insurance. You know, like I remember when I was going to hitchhike around Europe, I gave a lot of hitchhikers rides because I thought, you know, here I go. I want to make sure someone's out there picking me up. It doesn't work that way, trust me. And it can't be just because it feels good. Because some of these people will never thank you. Some will never respond in a positive way. Some people that you may love on and give to may never be fixed. They may be ones, brothers and sisters, who have to be carried their entire life to their last day. And it may just cost you and hurt you, and you never feel a sense of personal reward. So if you're in it for just some positive tourist experience of goodness, I think we're missing the motive. Jesus said it's by looking to him as you look at your brothers and sisters and saying, I serve unto the Lord. Literally, as I look out, I reach out as I would to the holy and perfect one. I don't sit there and judge why they're there, how they got there, what my party says is the right answer. I do it. I see the need. And I meet the need. That's who Jesus taught the neighbor was in the parable of the Good Samaritan. The person whose need you see and whose need you meet. Almsgiving is a word that isn't around in our church vocabulary very much anymore. But in every monotheistic religion, it made its appearance and has stayed at different times. And it just means that you're required as part of the pilgrimage of faith to be giving to the poor. And it used to get written on a lot. And this one guy named St. Basil, I don't know which came first, the spice or the guy, but the Spice Saints could have been a cool pop band back then, I guess. But St. Basil wrote some words that utterly gutted me. He talked about the things that we own are not there for our use, and we have to rethink what we have. And he said, the coat that you have in storage belongs to the naked man. The food that you do not use belongs to the hungry man. The money that you do not use belongs to the poor man. And we begin to hold these things, and in holding them, they bring about our own common condemnation. And we'll, in the words of the Bible, testify against us in the last day. It's like the movie Schindler's List. Oscar Schindler was trying to sell goods, cheat his own company so they could save these people. And then when things end and there's no more opportunity for it, He realizes the little pieces he has left of jewelry, and he starts to calculate, this could have bought a couple of more lives. I could have done something more. And here we stand with all this need. And I think if there's a heart in us, we're inspired. I think if there's any fidelity in us to Christ, we're sensing the call. Because I tell you, the call is on you from Christ to serve those who are naked, those who are hungry, those who are in prison, those who are sick. But such inspiration with such large need can sometimes just overwhelm us. We feel like, you know, how do I fix this? You're not gonna. Jesus said the poor you're gonna have with you always to the last day. But that doesn't let you off the hook. It just means that we continually have to do this, even if there isn't some great instant gratification or long-term one. Let me suggest some very practical things for you to do to be able to take part in following the mission of God. Remember, it's his mission. We didn't invent it. We're just following in the wake of this one who has this heart and desire to love mankind, his creation. The first, I think, happens very privately. It begins with something called repentance, where we all recognize that we've been the person who has wronged other people, who has lived selfishly, who has not given, who has hoarded rather than helped. Then we ask God for revelation. I believe that we follow God as he speaks, as he reveals. I have a little plaque that I keep in my kitchen in Arabic, and it's one of the names of God, and the name is God the Revealer. And I put that there to remind me that there isn't just some little manual I can follow that says, you know, section 2034, when I see a poor, I'm to do this percentage. It's not like that. You have to ask God how it is that you, with your senses, your opportunities, your place, you can follow. And then to reach out, to actually be the person who does. You know, there are some obvious ones. We think, I'll serve a meal at Joseph's house. But I would challenge you to look very carefully when you're asking God to reveal. One of the people who served at Joseph's house wasn't serving meals, but this guy put in hours from his skill as a web designer. Their web page was redone by a man at Tara who sat in front of a computer. He wasn't getting to do the high-touch stuff, but he did something very important for hours and hours. That helps. Figure out what God is revealing for you to do. The Bible talks about giving to needs this way. It says, make it prompt. In Proverbs 3:28, it says, if your neighbor comes to you in need, help him that day. Help him that day. Don't just think, you know what, when I get my life perfectly right, more balanced, when I'm done with this semester, when I lose 20 pounds, when I, you know, all the things that we got to fix first, then I'll give to someone else. The needs are there now. Be prompt. The Gospels teach us to be humble. In Matthew 6:2, it says, don't be like the Pharisees who are trumpeting. Gee, I get the help and I'm doing this. Everyone, look how good I am. Just do it. Do it quietly without even letting the left and right hand know the good you're doing. Just do the good. You don't have to announce it. Matter of fact, if you do, you have your reward. Don't expect you're going to be a sheepy when he calls that out, because your motivations are to serve men and not God. You're an idolater, not a Christian. It says that God loves, has an emotional tie to, the cheerful giver. That when people begin to feel really happy that they're giving, that they've been blessed with opportunity, that they meet the love of God. They're Father, and they have this intimate moment. Do you ever have those people where you share something? It could be a crowded room, and someone says something stupid or funny, and you look, and someone else's eye catches yours, and you know you're thinking the same thing, and you just have this great internal moment of connection where you go, yeah, right, we're right there. When you give cheerfully, you and the creator of the universe are right there in that moment together. There are ways in which we can do this. There are going to be personal ways that you can find to do it, and I want to challenge each one of you to connect personally to the communities in which you live. When God created the one time that he created a theocratic government, no, that was not the Reagan administration, the one time he created a theocratic government was Israel, right? He said, God is the king of this country. There was no slights around Reagan. Love Reagan. Nothing but love for Reagan. We can talk about that later if you have an issue. But when God ran Israel, he talked corporately about what the obligation was for working people to give. When they took a field and they had it and they plowed it, they were to reap it in an oval, even though they owned in squares and rectangles, because it left the corners. Take a percentage of what you do and give it to the poor. If it's your skills because you don't own the company, do it that way. If you own the company, figure out how you can be giving based on what you're doing. Don't then say, this then frees me up from doing anything with the church, because additionally, God also ran this community of the religious side of Israel, and he said to them in Leviticus 27:30, tithe, give to the church, because the Levites are going to know needs. Because people come to the pastors, and they say things that they don't tell everyone. And sometimes we actually know needs in the congregation that other people don't know. We know needs in the community of people who aren't of this congregation, who are coming, and it's very humbling, and they'll say, here's where I'm at. Would you please help? So be giving, and make your corporate, your economic life an opportunity to give. Leave the corners. Figure out what that means. If you're a student at your college or university, that's the community where you start to figure that out. You have certain amounts of money that you've made from your job or that your parents are giving you to live off of. Model that in your community. Figure out what it means to say to some other students, let's do something that we're going to intentionally mark for a semester of giving. Maybe it's going to be setting aside the number of times we have beer and wing nights, and we've put that money away, and we're going to use that for this, so that we can stand on that day and be able to live in a place where we say, we don't know where we saw you. We didn't recognize you. But we know what you say is true. When we helped the least one who had nothing, no food, no clothing, no community, we did it to you. Because that's ultimately what God sees. He sees everyone in need of him and connected to him. When he tried to teach Israel to live as a community, that was the critical piece. We weren't separate. The people who worked, worked for the poor. They worked for their family. They worked for the good of the commonwealth. The people who worshiped in the temple and gave to their temple and their church. They gave to that community, and they gave to the poor and the stranger and the alien who came to visit their community. My friends, I firmly believe the only thing that will ever heal all the wrongs is when we have a oneness. And I believe the only oneness we can ever have is in God. And I believe the only way that he has provided for us to have oneness is the sacrifice and love and guidance of Jesus Christ. But I call you not just to be people of creed, but people of action. Sacrifice is something that is innate to who God is, because he had to love people who could never pay him back. What could we give to the one who made all, who provided all, who answered the prayers and never prayed to us for anything? We're the debtors, and he's the owner. And we're reminded with the celebration of communion as the band comes up and as we center around sacrifice, where Christ the perfect one, Christ the sinless one, Christ the holy one, gave his life because we were in a spot where we said, I have need and I can't fix it. I have done wrong. I have been the one who has caused injury. I have caused sinfulness. I have caused need. I have grieved you. I have harmed others. I am a sinner. I am a failure. And I can't fix it. I'm powerless. And my friends can't fix it. And it's there. Christ was the one who said, I will do it. Not because it feels good. He would cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? The pain of the utter division between himself and God and community of people was so present. It wasn't for a warm fuzzy. It was because need was met by love, and it cost sacrifice, and it was in the nature of God to live that formula out. And so it's the calling of his followers. As we celebrate communion, I invite you to come forward. I invite you to come forward first as a person in need. Who, like the humble person who knocks on the door at the shelter, says, God, I need. I am the sinner. I am the wayward son and daughter. I need forgiveness in you. And to walk away as you go out of the doors of this place as someone who follows. As the Father sent me, so send I you, Jesus said. And I encourage you to repent, to pray for revelation, and to act on the ways that you can help restore a community of people seeing God alive in their world. Father in heaven, thank you for what you give us. Thank you for provisions. Thank you for not abandoning us. Thank you for calling us. Thank you for the happy, joyful obligation of carrying burdens with you. You've called us, Lord, to take up your yoke. Your burdens are not heavy. Father, forgive us for the times when all we've thought about is our own burdens, not our brother, not our sister, and not working with you. Bless Tracy and Joseph's house, Lord. Thank you that they give. Bless the people here, Lord, that we would give and not just be people who are gathered. Lord, I see nothing but opportunity ahead of us, fresh ground, unstained, new opportunities and things. Please help us, Lord, to have the fruit and contentment of knowing what it is to have chosen to serve at your calling. Bless us in this year ahead, in Jesus' name.